Hey everyone, and welcome back to the Leadership Project with your host, Mick Spears. We bring you thought-provoking guests and topics every week to challenge your thinking about leadership. Our aim is to help you become the leader that you wish you always had as we learn together and lead together. Hey everyone, welcome back to the Leadership Project with your host, Mick Spears. Our vision is to inspire all leaders to challenge the status quo. We bring you weekly topics and thought-provoking guests to get you to stop, reflect, and think about what it means to be a leader in a modern world. Our aim is to help you become the leader you wish you always had, as we learn together and lead together. Please enjoy the show. Hey everyone, and welcome back to the Leadership Project. I'm very honoured today to be joined by a special guest, Lee Prosenjak. Lee's job title is got to be one of the best ones I've ever seen. He is the owner and director of Cherry Creek Dance, with the job title, the guy that does everything but teach dance. And we're going to go into some of those things during the interview today. He started Cherry Creek Dance with his wife 28 years ago and uses that to inspire people to find themselves through the creativity of art and through dance. He's also an igniter with the Simon Sinek Corporation, and he's the COO and a partner at Hesse Partners, where they run strategy sessions, retreats, and focus in on group development. He's also a master forum trainer with Entrepreneurs Organization and part of the Global Forum Committee. And that's also something that I think that we will touch on during today's interview. Overall, I think the best way to sum up Lee is the tagline that he uses on his LinkedIn profile, which is to create art so that everyone can find their own inspiration, love, and greatness. Lee, it's a great honour to have you on the show today. Please, can you introduce yourself to our audience and tell us a little bit more about your background and what led you to be with us today?
Mick, a pleasure. My goodness. Thanks for having me here. I think you kind of did it. You kind of gave the background. I'm gonna carry you around with me all the time and just like let you give that introduction wherever I go to anybody I meet, you know, like they'll be like, who are you? And I'll just turn over to you and you can introduce me. That'll be easier for me. Save me some words there. What do you think?
Outstandingly. I'd be pleased to do it, particularly, and most people won't know this, particularly that you're in the Bahamas right now. If you need me to come over there and do that for you, I'll be there tomorrow.
Hey, open invite. You know, that's I love it. I love it. It's always a great time. Yeah. You read off all these great bullet points, all these fantastic things that I do currently and have done for years and things. And that's something that's always been really important to me, especially as an artist, is to never have the same day happen twice. And I love the idea that I can jump from sort of thing to thing. And I was just right before we jumped on this recording of the podcast here. Sorry if I just disillusioned everybody that this isn't live, just FYI. But I just had to go have some interaction for our hotel project. I was sending emails and Slack messages this morning around the dance studio and having some text messages and things too. So and later on this afternoon, I've got to work with a one-on-one coaching client that I have too. So, I mean, like there's always something new. There's always something different. And that's really intriguing to me and in the middle of this, because I'm in the Bahamas, I just go walk on the beach and that's where I feed my soul quite a bit too. So I know it's horrible.
Someone's got to do it, Lee. But, and thank you for sacrificing yourself and walking on the beach for us all. That's very inspirational, actually. So Lee, you've got such a diverse career and so many wonderful things there. And there are so many directions that this conversation could take. And I'm planning to follow it wherever it takes us. The thread that I'd like to probably share with the audience, what really intrigues me about Lee in all of that he does, it's really about how people learn. So we're going to focus a lot on how people learn and how that might change throughout their development, whether it changes as they get older or whether it changes generationally. So that'll be a little bit of a thread through there as we talk about Lee's background. So tell me more about Cherry Creek Dance. So 28 years now, what inspired you to create the studio in the first place?
Well, it was actually my wife, Stephanie, that created the dance studio. And it's so it was her vision. It was her idea. And it's just something that she was a dance instructor and worked all over Denver and had a pretty good following of people, and then decided that it was time for her to do her own thing and be an entrepreneur. And she's got a great mindset in that she can sort. She gets, you know, she's the total artist that sees the vision for all of the productions and all the choreography and things along those lines. And of course, there's a great team that we've assembled over all these years too, of just amazing artists themselves. And then she's got that sort of that business mindset as well too. So she's really understanding that and saying like, oh my gosh, I think this this class works better over here, and let's try this and let's make sure. And if not, let's change the staffing hours so that we're not paying for something that is a loss leader or something along those lines. So she's really good about having that sort of both halves of the brain working. And so she started that 28 years ago. I met her, I think it's been 22 years now since I met her the first time. And I could see that vision and I'm like, great, I'm in. Like, let's just go, you know, like, and so that's really how I got involved. So it was a few years after, and there were things there that said, you know, like we sold tap shoes. And I went to the cupboard and there was like one size of each tap shoe in the cupboard. And I would sell one that day. And then I would call our supplier and leave a message on an answering machine, which is like all for all the, you know, the people that don't know what that is, right? Like, well, sort of like analog voicemail, which you still might not even know what that means either. But that's I would call and leave a message on an answering machine every night and say, hey, I sold a size 8 tap shoe today. Could you please send me another one? And, you know, a week later, I would get another size 8 in the mail. And after doing that for, you know, a few months, I started to say, like, maybe you could send me 2 size 8 tap shoes. And then that way, you know, we could build our inventory and we could I had it in stock for the next person that maybe wanted to come in that middle of the week. So it was a lot of just sort of on the job growth. Things that I didn't know, things that I had never experienced before. And just that seems to make sense. So let's do more of that.
Yeah, very good. So that, I guess that leads to this amazing job title. And Elon Musk is really famous for recently just deciding to change his job title and the job title of his CFO. I think the CFO is now called Master of Coin or something like that, right? So not everyone gets to choose their job title, but you did, and your job title is the guy that does everything but teach dance. So tell us more about that.
Yeah, it seemed appropriate, you know, because I've always felt like I'm the person that's running around behind the scenes that you don't necessarily see, and that always just kind of like creates more art there, you know, in what else can we do and how else can we do that? And as a ultra small business at that time, it was a lot of like, I have to wear all of these hats because I really want Stephanie to be able to create art and focus on that. So what do I need to do to take off everything else from her plate so that she can focus on that? And so that became everything else. You know, and it's a very often asked question, including in my sessions, even today, they're like, oh, you own a dance studio, teach us some dance moves. And I'm like, well, I got to leave that to the experts. There's some things I have to leave off my plate, and that's one of them. So I can't dance at all. I look horrible when I even try. And so my wife years ago said, maybe don't try that anymore. Maybe that's not your thing, you know, so that's we'll leave that to the pros. So we leave that to all the experts there. And people that want to be experts, that's also, that's why you come to us.
I'm taking 2 very powerful things away from that, Lee. And I'm going to start with the last one, which is your wife being so open and clear with you. Lee, perhaps dance is not your thing. That's a very authentic and open and What do they call it? Radical candor. That's radical candor in action right there. I love
that. Scott, yes.
And the other one was surrounding yourself with people, and in this case it's a marriage as well, but surrounding yourself with people that have got complementary skill set.
So much.
As a leader, have a think about this, or audience at home. Look at all of the things that you do on a day-to-day basis. Give yourself an honest scorecard. Is that in my wheelhouse? Am I the best person to be able to do this? And have a think about whether outsourcing that to someone else, whether it be your partner, someone else in the business, maybe even a subcontractor, get someone else to do those things that are not in your wheelhouse so that you can focus your energy at what you do best. And in this case, what Stephanie does best is teach dance, be the visionary, be the artistic one. Lee's focus is on the business and how to make it run more smoothly. Is that a good reflection of what I heard there, Lee?
It totally is. Yeah, we look at that as, you know, a lot of times together, Stephanie and I come up with the bowling pins, and then it's my job to knock those down. Right? Like that's how we kind of operate and have for very many years. And it's, for the most part, it's gone really well. And I've been a big student of lots of those learnings from different books and theories and things like that. Michael Gerber, The E-Myth, and Tim Ferriss, 4-Hour Work Week, and things along those lines. And I love that idea of being able to work on the business rather than in the business. And that's something that we tried for many years. And it was hard because, again, being an ultra small business at that time and growing and going through those growth pains, there was nobody else to delegate anything else to. There was nobody else to, you know, get on board with this. We couldn't afford anything else either. So I had to wear all those hats. And then as we kept growing, I was slowly starting to get some things off my plate and onto others. And that was helpful. And it wasn't without its missteps either. I think all the time we look at these things and go, oh my gosh, no, it was so perfect. And look at this. It was a perfect rise and ascension into greatness. No, we had a bookkeeper that stole $47,000 from us. And I mean, like that was over a 6-month period. And I'm trying to do the right thing and outsource that to somebody else that's much better at this and clearly much better at finances than I am, because they were able to take a bunch of money out that I didn't know was missing all of a sudden. And at the same time, I had another employee that ran up a corporate credit card to about $13,000 of personal expenses. And so now I got that debt on my books too. And the bookkeeper who was stealing money out the back door is like, I can't believe that person would do that. And what a horrible thing. And, you know, like all that sort of, and I'm like, yeah, how horrible. I thought both of these people were on my team. And I totally missed that they were not the right people. And quite honestly, not good people either. So that's I miss that. And that sucked. So think about it and go, oh my gosh, how did I miss such, you know, these huge glaring examples sort of thing. But what great lessons they've provided for me and for lots of other people across the world all these years later too.
I take two things away from that as well, Lee. So the first one, once again, going backwards, that you learnt from it. So every experience that you make, as long as you're learning from it and moving forward, I think that's the best thing that you can take from that. So, and thank you for sharing it with us, by the way.
Totally.
The second one that I heard, because we did just say about, you know, outsource the things that are not in your wheelhouse and let it go, it doesn't mean that you're not accountable. All right? So surround yourself with people you trust. Let them do their job. Empower them to do their job.
Yes. That
doesn't mean set and forget. You're still correct. Accountable. Yeah. Okay. Really good, Lee.
And we got to watch that stuff. I'm still not good at finances. I have a much better team around me now to do that. And it really still creates a lot of stress for me, because after that experience happened, Stephanie looked at me and was like, you're signing every check from here on out. No one else is ever allowed to do that. And I'm like, that's horrible for me. That's a horrible job for me to have. I'm not good at it. I don't like it. It causes a lot of anxiety. It causes me to procrastinate, which is my cue for, I realize that about myself, that every time I procrastinate, it's because I get overwhelmed. And so I don't know where to start. So I just won't start. And so it took a long time to rebuild that trust with somebody new to even say like, hey, I think I need more help on this again. And then to have that trust with Stephanie to say like, by the way, let's look for somebody else to do that. I mean, that was a whole nother conversation on it of its own to say, how are we ever going to find somebody? And yeah, what are the stop gaps there?
Yeah, wonderful self-awareness there, Lee, but also like the lesson that you're talking there about trust and accountability. Yeah, really good. Well, let's go a little bit deeper into Cherry Creek Dance, and this will start us on this journey about learning. So in Cherry Creek Dance, you've got dancers of all ages, from almost babies through to adults, right? So from people
16 months all the way up through
16 months.
We used to train the it's in Colorado, and we trained the Miss Senior Colorado, someone who won that title in a pageant. So it would be impolite to ask that person their age, of course. Mm-hmm. And so it's up there.
So let's just say 16 months through to older.
Much older.
Very, very politely, we'll say
29. At least 29. Yes.
At least 29. Okay. Very good. All right. So that's a very polite way of saying it. What do you and Stephanie see in that evolution? Like, so as someone goes through, let's start with a child, and let's talk about through the eyes of a child how they see the world and how they learn.
Yeah, what a great question and a great concept too. What we've always strived to do, and Stephanie can talk about this far deeper than I can, is that what we've always strived to do is to create a fun, a positive environment where people enjoy this. So, especially with like things like ballet has had a long history of people mistreating each other and yelling at someone that you're doing that wrong and something along those lines, and which has created its own share of issues in the world. And anyone that says that people that study ballet are not they're not without their faults, and they've always had, you know, a lot of things that go along with that, like improper diet and not taking very good care of their body and body awareness issues and things along those lines, that self-image issues. And I think that's from years and years of a bunch of sort of the negative, the stick approach of, you know, let's smack you for doing something wrong. And in the environment that we like to create, we want to just create art. And so we'd like to help you do something that's right instead of looking for something that's wrong. So let's compliment the things that you're doing really well. And it's not just a toxic positivity of where, you know, where you're only saying like, this is great and you're perfect and you're gold. No, it's not that. But let's focus on those things that are strengths for each and every one of those dancers. And we don't just ignore the weaknesses and say, oh, well, you know, you'll pick up tap dancing eventually. Like it's not something along those lines, but let's really harness that. So it's a creative, it's a fun environment all the time. It's very positive. Again, not without its own drama, of course. Anytime you get a group of kids together and their parents together too, and they're on a repeated basis, and so they're going to have a lot of interaction together, there's a lot that goes on there. So we try and demonstrate what that looks like to have that positive attitude with each one of our instructors and each one of the team members that you'll interact with. We try and do that in our messaging. And then when we're in the classroom, that's what we're talking about. That's what we're reinforcing all the time, is that positive. This is a fun and this should be an enjoyable experience. And that drive that comes for each of those dancers. I can't tell you how many people that just, you know, take 1 hour of class a week with us for years and years and years and years. And, you know, it's been around for 28 years. We have people that have been bringing back their, not only their kids, but in this case, grandkids too, that are coming back and learning dance from our team. Like that's awesome, because it means that we're doing something right. And we have a whole ton of people that have gone on to professional careers and are on Broadway and kind of every major show. Typically we have a, you know, one or two of our alumni dancers that are in all those shows and lots of the big rock concert tours that you see with dancers and just still performers in their own right. And I look at that as we did our job well with that, with both of those groups too, because as long as we fostered a lifelong love of art for each person that we come into contact with, that's a win. Now, what you want to do with that is up to you. And that drive comes from within. And some kids, you can see that very early on that they're like, yes, I'm driven to be better at this. And I have a lot of passion for that. But it doesn't mean that they're always going to have that passion, that they're always going to see that in that same light. It might be the right choice for them today, but a different choice to make tomorrow. So I want this to be fun. I want people to have that great experience so that no matter what, I always say that the dance never leaves you either. So like at some point, like, cool, that's something that I did when I was a kid. Now it's like, you know, I'm coming back as an adult and saying like, where can I want to just go to the gym and hit the treadmill or ride the stationary bike or something along those lines. I want to do something that's more fun and it can engage that creative side of me as well as the aerobic side.
Outstandingly, there's two themes I want to pick up on there, and we'll go one at a time. But the two are about that fun aspect, and the second one is about positive psychology. I'll start on the positive psychology one, and Martin Seligman, he's the father of positive psychology, and he can describe this in ways that I can't possibly match him. So if you want to study it further, he would be the go-to person for anyone in the audience that wants to go deeper into this. But there's absolutely something into it in this. And I also want to correct a misunderstanding about positive psychology, which is also something that you touched on there, Lee. So the concept about positive psychology and reinforcing with positive language, with positive affirmations of what's working and really encouraging someone. I'll find this video and I'll put it in the show notes. There's a really great, pretty extreme study that was conducted on golfers and getting into the mind of these people that were going through golfing lessons, and the instructors purposely in a controlled study were giving encouragement to one group of golfers, and their improvement over time was, in fact, in some cases dramatic, but it was a steady improvement. And then on the other side was the overly critical, and it was a little bit exaggerated, but the overcritical, oh my God, that's the worst golf swing I've ever seen, or that's never going to work, and all these things. And sure enough, the golfers start shanking the ball and all over the place. There's absolutely something in positive psychology when used correctly. But one of the things that I picked up with you, Lee, there is that it is about encouragement. It is about positivity, but it's not about telling someone, oh, that's wonderful, when it's not. So if they aren't exactly getting the steps right or whatever the case may be, you do need to correct them, but correct them in a positive way. Is that what I'm hearing, Lee?
100%. And I do this even with my work with CEOs and everything too. I'm like, wow, I think I hear where you're trying to go with that. What makes you want to say that? What makes you want to do that thing? What makes you want to, you know, and let's go into that rather than just say like, no, you're wrong. And I have a strong belief that one, oh no, takes away, at least 10 way to goes. So you get that one negative thing and you're like, well, that person never liked me in the last 10 years. I'm like, no. Right. So I want to be very careful with that because I don't want to be that. I don't want to take from that bank account.
Yeah. Good. And this is at the root of psychology really in this, that if you go in that critical mindset, someone is going to tap into their reptilian brain. They're going to get into fight or flight mode. They're going to get defensive. Whereas if you can keep them in their frontal cortex or even if you build emotion into it and use the limbic brain, they're going to be in an exploratory. They're not going to shut down on you. They're ready to expand their mind. They're ready to explore what they're talking with you. And you're still correcting them and you're still giving them the guidance that they need. Or in some cases, you're taking them on a journey of discovery and they're finding it themselves even better through this kind of positive approach. One of the things that really makes me think of, very famous quote, I'd love to share this one with you, Lee, and get your thoughts on it. Henry Ford, whether you think you can or can't, you're probably right. What's your reflections on that?
Totally, because that mindset is so important. So whatever that looks like for you, that's going to be the direction that we go. Whether that's tied to that vision, whether it's not, whether it's, you know, whether that's going to be something that's very positive, yes, I can do this, or whether I say something that's self-sabotaging, like, no, I can't do this, or there's no way I can do that. Yeah, you're right, because that's the direction that you've just set that intention to. So I want to set my intention to something that's positive, that's good, that's inspiring to me each and every day. And I, you know, for me personally, I use a lot of music to do that, so that I can help myself go towards that positive space, no matter what that is. So that's, you know, a great song first thing in the morning. That's something in the middle of the day to kind of help me, you know, muster through, or, you know, keep it going, or something along those lines. If I'm in a repetitive task, which I don't like at all, you know, like I'm like, I gotta figure this out. And that really helps me kind of just overcome and like, let's go. I can do this. I can do this.
Yeah. Wonderful sharing, Lee. I think that's a good segue to get us back to the second topic, which is fun.
Yeah.
Tell me more about how you make learning fun in the dance studio.
It's, you know, that I've always said that the dance studio has been like my sandbox to practice for the rest of the world. And so when I started off with Stephanie and met her 22 years ago and jumped right in, I was like, wow, this is kind of cool. And then as we grew the business and we became a member of the Entrepreneurs Organization, or EO, which was 16 years ago now, I think. Oh, my gosh, that seems like forever ago. You know, I use the same sort of techniques when I do like a bunch of the collaborative, mastermind groups, if you will. We call that a forum. When I work with forums and talk to CEOs from, you know, companies all over the world sort of thing, I use the same sort of techniques, which I don't like to tell that to the CEOs that I'm using the same ideas on you that I use on the 2-year-olds at the dance studio, but really, a lot of that is true. It's just a slightly different approach and definitely a different vocabulary compared to the 2-year-olds. But that's it's the for me, it's a very much a learning journey of how to actually approach this and what to do. I've got very clear intentions at one end of here's what we'd like to accomplish. In the dance studio, that's a recital dance or something, you know, that we're going to perform, or some sort of art that we're going to create. And that can be, you know, a small group of people, larger group of people. It really kind of depends. And in my work with CEOs, it's really it's this larger group, or what do we see? What's the vision that you'd like to see, and what would you like to achieve? And no matter what, it's the positive to say, like, okay, how can we get there? What does that look like? And in that journey, I say, great. Well, how are we going to get there? So when I work with like the CEOs and do those roundtable groups, what I essentially do is I say something of the content. So I'll say like, okay, here's the concept that we're going to wrestle with today. And then I explain it to them. You know, could be my own idea, could be somebody else's idea, right? But I'll explain that content to them and say, here it is. And then what I do is I give us a chance to interact with it. So we ask questions, same thing in the choreography, right? Like they're asking questions. Was it this foot or that foot? Do I spin inside, outside, those type of things, right? So we have a chance to ask questions and really interact with it. And then it goes to an experiential place where we're learning. Okay, so now let's take what we've learned and do it. So let's do some sort of fashion of that. For the CEOs, that looks like an exercise that's built around something like that. Or let's go have a conversation, or go break down to a one-on-one or a small group of three, or, you know, let's go out to a larger group if that, you know, whatever the case might be. A lot of times at the dance studio, we're repeating that move across the floor, or we take just a little section of it and repeat that a couple of times. So make sure that you kind of get it and really get a chance to interact with it. And Stephanie always says, I want you that to get this into your bones, right? So like, I want you to just really feel like you've got it. And so when we do that experiential part, that's the difference. It's very easy to sit on the sidelines and say, oh, I could do that. It's very different if you're actually doing it, trying it, getting it, and going, oh my gosh, this looks horrible, or my foot should be over here. How do you shift your weight like that? How do you think about that marketing idea differently? And so I can you can see that those different interaction points when they're in the experience itself. And once we do that, then we get back together and debrief that and say, all right, how'd that go? And that's something that just is so like powerful, is in that debrief to say, oh, like totally see how that was so different, or why we didn't complete that task, or why it felt so weird to do that move, or I missed that formation or something. I can see now what was going on there. And so you're having your own insight, your own learning, and it's going to be different than what I could ever tell you it's going to be. So I just have to be open to that, to say, like, I don't know where my learning is going to come from. And some days it's going to be here and some days it's going to be there, but I'm just open to that concept. But that's kind of my sort of four-step process on how I teach content, what that looks like, how we interact with it all the time.
All right. I want to explore a little bit deeper on two things there. I'll summarize something on the fun part, and then I want to come to the questioning and the journey of discovery that we're touching on. So on the fun part, I'm like you, very similar to the sports analogy that you brought up before. I actually do enjoy running, interestingly enough, and not everyone does, but I do enjoy running. But even I, as a runner, don't like the treadmill, right? I call it the dreadmill, like many people. It's really do not like treadmills, right? So put me on a dreadmill for 30 minutes and I'm like, is it over yet? Put me on a tennis court for 2 hours, and at the end of the 2 hours, I go, really? Are we done? Can't we keep going? Right? So, because I'm having fun, and have a look at my step count at the end of a tennis match, I can tell you more than probably when I was running. Right? So I, go crazy running around the court and all those kind of things because I'm having fun the whole time.
Yeah.
My question to you, challenging one, how do we bring that into the workplace? So that if you're on a 2-hour Zoom meeting, let's say, that people don't go, oh, thank God that's over, versus, oh, are we done? Really? Can't we keep going? Right. Any thoughts?
Yeah. It's actually at the very beginning of the pandemic here, I jumped on with a whole bunch of the teams that we work with, and we talked about what does it mean to be on Zoom? And what does that look like? And how is that different than conducting this meeting on a normal basis, traditional basis, I should say, where that was everyone stand around the water cooler and, talk at each other for 10, 15 minutes. And I mean, I believe it's that interaction that we can utilize in Zoom too. One of my good friends, Jen Waldman, she said she became obsessed with this one question at the very beginning of the pandemic, which was, what can we build that's so great virtually that it would suck if it were in person? And I've sort of, used my own language there, right? And bastardized her quote. So, but that's what I became obsessed with too. And I'm like, no, I used to do this thing in person and it worked really well here. But is that the right choice to make for virtual? Is that the thing? So we've been using all sorts of virtual techniques throughout all of the sessions that I do, including the work with CEOs, the public classes that we have, both at the dance studio with Team Simon, like all those things, like it's not just like a let's talk at you. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants that. And it doesn't interact with the content. If that learning is going to come from the experiential part or the debrief of the experiential part, that sort of stuff, I got to get to that. And I got to get to that faster. So when I'm on Zoom, I'm like, let's type into the chat here. And we can do that all day long, type into the chat, type your notes in chat. And one of the phrases that I often say on Zoom calls is, listen, if it was an aha moment for you, chances are good that it was an aha moment for somebody else. So please do add all those nuggets that you get into the chat so that even if you're writing them down in your notes or your handwriting or something, because you need to see it that way to remember that, write it into the chat because somebody else is thinking about that totally differently. So let's hear what they're thinking about too. What struck them? Because I can get it in short bursts there instead of just, so using the chat and just like a chat is cool. I do a lot of things like I call it a chat swarm where everyone waits and we type everything in, but don't push enter yet until the very end. And on the count of three, everyone hits enter at the same time. Now we got this whole bunch of stuff that I don't have time to read all those things, especially not when I'm delivering a course. So I just trust that there's like greatness that comes out in there. And the best part is there's a lot of times where people say, I'll have what they're having, you know, like what sounds good today? Well, I'll take the veggie burger. Oh, that sounds great. I'll have what they're having. Well, there's not a chance to do that. So if we're brainstorming differently, we can use a chat swarm to say, instead of just saying like, what's that? Who had the first idea? Usually the leader, by the way, let's do a brainstorm. How are we going to save the company? And the leader says, I've got an idea. And everyone says, let's do that. That's clearly the best idea. So there's this leadership bias that goes along with that. And we never hear any of the other ideas. Right. Well, if we use a chat swarm, there's no chance to say like, oh, cool, let's go with that one. Everyone's contributing all at once to say like, let's see what's out there. And then we can look at that and go, ooh, I think we could build on this. Ooh, I think we can build on that. That one we might have to shelve for a couple of years. Mm. We don't have the right time, right? So we can get interactive. I use slides. I use lots of different things, different media. I've got videos that I play in my presentations. I do, right? Like those are all different interaction points. So it's not just me talking at somebody for an entire hour. That wouldn't work for a dance class at all, right? If I just told you, here are the steps and here's how you do it, that wouldn't work. It's the same thing with our CEOs too, that won't work at them either.
Three really super powerful things there.
Mick, I'm not joking. You're coming with me everywhere. This is perfect. I'm writing my own stuff down now all of a sudden. This is good.
Okay, this is brilliant, Lisa. Three exceptional lessons come from that. The first one, I just love that you stopped and considered what are the emerging properties from a virtual environment that you couldn't have done in a physical environment. I just love that. And the one that you picked on is a really important one, is in a physical environment, politeness tells us, well, it's a bit more, even more than politeness, but politeness tells us that only one person talks at a time. In a virtual environment, you can have continuous engagement that is not necessarily one person at a time. And sometimes that can get out of hand, like you said, the flood of, oh, well, where did all those comments come from? But the fact that everyone has that opportunity to do that is really interesting. Really interesting.
I'm going to throw one quick point in here too, because I just can't stand it, is that like our tradition, our culture already on virtual has been everybody go on mute unless it's your turn to talk. And we wouldn't do that if we were in the room together. I wouldn't wait for you. Like I would wait for you to you know, finish before I say, hey, I've got a question or I want to, right? But even that act of like pushing the unmute button can be a limiting thing sometimes. Like, oh, I'm not going to ask that question. I'd have to unmute myself, wait for a pause in the conversation. So with my group of CEO roundtables, I'm like, everybody off mute the entire time. You've got to be off mute the entire time. This is a dialogue. This is not a lecture.
That's an interesting one there. And a lot of the please go on mute comes from background noise and all that kind of stuff. But if you can control that background noise and remove the problem, not the essence of it, right? And then, everyone get off mute and have a conversation. That's really interesting, Lee.
$50 on Amazon, get yourself a good mic. You've got a great mic. You've got a great camera, right? Like you can invest in this a little bit. I went overboard, of course, but like other people, you can invest in this, you know, $100, $200 sort of thing, and you've got a great setup. And it can be very similar to being in person, or sometimes better.
Really interestingly, I really like this. The second one that you pick up, and this one I did learn from Simon, I have to admit, but it's something that stuck with me for a long time, and it is something that I share with the audience of the Leadership Project as well. And it actually comes from Nelson Mandela's father, in fact. And that is about, and I want everyone to listen to this one very clearly at home, that leaders need to learn to be the last to speak for the reasons that Lee is talking about. It is human nature. And it's not even what you say. It's even your body language. When you're in a room of people, and there is a leader in the room, whether they are the leader by appointment or leader by their inspiration and them, in New Zealand, we'd call it mana, their ability to inspire people and the person that everyone looks to, they are looking for body language signals. They're looking for what they say, how they say it. And if you're speaking too early, you're going to shut down the conversation. Can you explore that or unpack that a little bit more for us, Lee?
Totally. There's been so much research done about that leadership bias, and it's changed the way that I brainstorm with our teams, all the different teams that I'm on. It's changed the way that we interact, and it's changed the conversation between Stephanie and I, quite honestly, because if we did a brainstorm at the dance studio years ago, that is what it would be. Exactly. All right, let's get the whiteboard out or flip chart paper and let's get together, you know, a whole bunch of ideas that we can, you know, for new marketing ideas or something like that. And Stephanie or myself would come up with one and then people would say, great, let's go. And there was a great amount of study coming out from Harvard that said, you know, that there's so much of a leadership bias. And I read this years ago and I said to Stephanie, like, all right, here's the deal. We can't be the first to answer. In fact, we got to let them do the brainstorm and we're just going to observe it and see where they get to. We can still make a decision. We can still, you know, we've got our ideas. And that's what Harvard said is like, basically it, they call it, instead of brainstorming, it's brain thinking first. So write down your ideas, write it down so that you capture a bunch of those. And then we can all contribute to the sort of collective pool. There, traditional rules of brainstorming still apply. There's no bad ideas. It's like good improv comedy, right? Like you just say yes, and how can we build on this? You don't have to defend what's been said or say some, no, you know, like, oh no, that marketing idea won't work. Don't say that. There's that negative programming coming back in. Just, you know, like maybe it doesn't make the short list at the end. Okay. Right. Like you don't have to defend your idea. You don't have to, you know, get anything off track by saying something. We just say, yeah, what else is there that we can do? So I love that idea of that brain thinking, let's write a bunch of these things down and then we can all contribute to that. Started doing that at the studio years ago. At the beginning of the pandemic, Simon did that with the entire team too, to say like, okay, everyone come with 15 ideas of new things that we can do. It wasn't one or two, because we would get the same one or two from everybody, right? Let's do online classes. Oh, great. We haven't thought of that one yet, right? Like, what else? And so everyone came with, like, it was a vast amount of ideas. And it was really kind of wild. I don't know if anybody ever came with 15, but like, you can see the idea here that like, more is better. The quantity beats quality when we're looking at brainstorming. So how else can we foster that engagement? And again, in a virtual environment compared to an in-person environment, I've been using lots of different forms to do that too. Open up a Google Sheet. Everyone has access to it. Everyone type those into that Google Sheet so that we can just get that running list going, or use the chat, or some of the other tools like Miro and Mira, Mural are fantastic for things like that. Everyone's got access to Google, of course. Google Jamboards, right? Like these are great things that we can utilize, harness that technology. And quite honestly, there's another place where this might be a better thing than in person, is that if I can sit here and think in quiet for my own, you know, couple of minutes here before I am asked to contribute to that, that's good. And I'm not worried about the person that's next to me, because that would be me, the class clown that's you know, gonna rib you or say a little something or get you off track. And you need to think, right? Yeah, you're raising your hand too. I see you, Mac. That's, you know, we could be kindred spirits there, right? I'm going to do that because that's part of my process, right? I'm going to procrastinate a little bit, go like, oh my gosh, what did they ask us to do again? And if I have that in chat that says, here's what you're being asked to do, or everybody goes to their breakout rooms or something along those lines that really can, and all of a sudden I can come back and I'm focused, I'm ready. I'm like, okay, here I can contribute. Bonus points if I know what the topic is before we get to that meeting. So that way I can show up prepared for that, which for some people might be like, I don't prepare at all. And other people are like, oh my gosh, I've done 10 years worth of research now all of a sudden in order to make that happen. And Mick, I can't remember the exact question that you asked that got me onto that tangent of just that idea of brainstorming, but I hope that I answered that.
it was brilliant. We started with leaders should speak last, but that was such a expansion that I want to add something here. I just love everything you just said, Lee. And one of the things that it unlocked is diversity and inclusion.
Yes.
And so many organizations are struggling with this today. So diversity,
yes.
Collecting a diversity of thoughts from a diverse group of people, and inclusion, giving the people a psychologically safe environment where they can have the platform, where they can voice their opinion, where their opinions are valued, and where they feel like they matter. By using these techniques that you're talking about, Lee, you're enabling that environment. And when we say diversity and inclusion, I'm not just talking about gender, race, socioeconomic background. I'm even talking introverts and extroverts.
Yes.
You're giving a level playing field where everyone can have their say. Your thoughts?
Totally. Yeah. Thankfully, this has been in the conversation recently, but it always should have been. Oftentimes, when I set up these mastermind groups with all these groups of CEOs and things, they say, oh, well, like, we want somebody in here that's got a bigger business than the rest of the group here so that we can learn from that person. And here we are again, going back to the dance studio. If I told you how many times I heard from a parent that said, but my kid does better with older kids. I'm like, at some point, no one wants to be the youngest one in the class. No one wants to be the oldest one in the class either. No one wants to be the smallest size business. No one wants to be the largest size business, because everybody wants to be learning from each other. But for me, I'm looking at that and I'll say, when I set up a group of CEOs, yes, absolutely, I'm looking for different races, for genders, for sexual orientations, for anything that you can see. I want, in US terms, I want Republicans, I want Democrats, I want everybody. I want everybody at that table. Because what got you here is so different than what got me there. And I'm open to that learning, no matter where it comes from. And if we can have that conversation in a very respectful nature, you're never going to convince me. If you're a liberal, you're never going to convince me to be a conservative, and vice versa, I'm pretty sure, right? Like, you've probably got that figured out. And I'm not going to try and convince you or sway you any one way or another. But what I'm always interested in learning is why you made that decision that you made for yourself. And no defense, right? No judgment for me to say, like, you should or shouldn't have done that or anything like that. Hot topic today, of course, with vaccines. And, you know, are you going to be vaccinated? Are you not going to be vaccinated? Are you going to vaccinate your kids or not, or any of those things? And I'm super curious about why. Not about if you are or not, or if you have or haven't, or what your opinion is around, you know, the science and all that sort of stuff. I want to know why you made that choice. Because I would just guess that 99.5 times out of 100 that there's huge learning for me in that. Not so much about, you know, all that other stuff that goes along with it, but your journey to get you to that decision. Fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. So I'll listen to that all day long. I'll listen to that all day long. You start yelling and screaming about how you're wrong and I'm right or any of that sort of stuff, everybody tunes out. So that I want to have all those different backgrounds, because that's the joy that comes to that table. And if I can hear what your background and what made you who you are today, I mean, who knows? Like, if this is a big project and it falls into your wheelhouse and you're the most junior person on our team that's been here like 3 days, but all of a sudden I can see that that lines up with something that you have in your past, I am using that strength to our team's advantage. And we do that with choreography all the time at the dance studio. Okay, we need someone to do something really a wild, crazy trick right here. So let's take that person that's got the gymnastics background that can do this crazy flip in the middle of the stage and not eat, right? Like, let's do that. And then we need somebody else in another scene that's going to be like, I need to take the smallest person so that I can have a group of 10-year-old girls lift up another one. So I'm going to take the smallest person there. So that way it's easier for them to lift that one person and make it look awesome, right? Like, who knows? I never know what the next right move is going to be. But if I can find out, if I can listen to your background and hear and understand what's there and what got you here, you could be the next leader for that project, for that item, for that day, for that year, for that company. Who knows? But that's why I want everybody at the table. The biggest size business I can possibly get, the smallest size business I can possibly get. I want that billion-dollar brand. I want that solo entrepreneur that is sitting in their basement, hungry as can be, and scraping it out for $22,000 a year. I want both, because I can learn from both of those people if I'm open to it.
Just brilliantly. There are so many nuggets of gold in there, and I need to summarize it a little bit for the audience at home of everything that I took away from that. But please take your own perceptions away from what you're hearing from Lee, but I'm going to share with you what I took away. So true diversity of thought, where we're getting in as much diversity in there as possible. But listen to the other things that Lee was saying. Listening without judgment. Keeping an open mind. Not listening just for what you want to hear or what you already know is true. Listening with true intent to learn something new. Listening with curiosity. Listening with an open heart and understanding, well, hang on a second. Not only am I interested in your view, I'm interested in why you're of that view. What is the emotion that, or the experience that led you to that conclusion? And then you start exploring new possibilities and new realities and having an open will to follow that. So we're really talking here about not just diversity of thought. We're talking about deep listening and something that I've seen you write about, Lee, which is facilitating conversations that truly matter. Just wonderful. I just loved every moment of that. We're now really heading towards a lot of the work that you do with EO and with HESI Partners and with Simon's group and about these facilitations of these group discussions. And I want to come back to some of the other things that you brought up before. You spoke a lot about, instead of telling people, asking them questions. You spoke about experiences and taking them through experiences. And you spoke about them talking about it amongst each other. Tell us more about those three in the work that you do where you are running group cohort type sessions, where you're trying to develop cohesive work groups. You're trying to, whether it be a strategy session or could be on a retreat or it could be virtual, to do those group development activities. Tell us more about the power of those three things: asking questions, experiences, and getting them talking amongst themselves.
You know, what's really interesting is that in EO, we set up these groups. I do this in lots of other companies and lots of other different places as well. And what's funny is that people always come to this and they say things like, I'm looking for a group of peers to kind of tell me what to do or be a good sounding board so I can bounce ideas off of and that sort of thing. And often we call those like groups like a board of advisors, right? Like you've heard that term, of course, a million times in your life, I'm sure. And what I've decided is that no one actually wants advice, like at all. We ask for it all the time and we don't actually want it. We're only ever looking for the advice that ratifies the decision that I've already made in my head. So that's the advice I'm going to look for. So if I say to you, Mick, like, what do you think of my shirt? If you tell me that my shirt looks horrible, I'm going to be like, Mick, you clearly don't know what you're talking about. This shirt looks spectacular, right? What do you think of my hair? My hair has its own cult following, right? So like, that's the, you don't know, you don't have hair. So I mean, like, that's a, like, you can't judge my hair. Like, great hair recognizes great hair, right? Like, that's a, not, sorry, no disrespect. I'm just, you know, having a little fun here, of course, right? So if you told me that I had fantastic hair, I'd be like, oh my gosh, we're clearly best friends now, right? Like, because you complimented, you ratified that decision that I already made. If you said that you didn't like my hair, that it's been the same style forever and that it's crazy and shouldn't you dye it because there's gray streaks going through it and all that sort of stuff, like, then we're not best friends. All of a sudden, we're like arch enemy. Because you didn't agree with the decision that I've already made. So we run around and it's such a basic concept. And you can disagree with me about my shirt. Doesn't really matter, right? It's not gonna make or break my day or anything like that. But if it's a bigger decision, if I look to you and I say, how do you think I'm, you know, parenting my children? I don't have children, but I feel like I've got a bunch of them at the dance studio. So like, what do you think of my parenting style? Well, that's stuff that matters. And so now, like, I'm not gonna be open to you saying that, you know, well, you're messing up your kids. Those are fighting words, of course, right? Like, we're not friends. And you're going to be friends with those people that have the same sort of parenting style that you do. Those are going to be your friends. And those are the people that are going to, you know, say, no, you're reinforced what might be doing wrong or doing harm or something along those lines too. There's another plug for diversity, right? Like if we can have different people in our social circles that don't agree with everything that we do. Okay. But how do we get there? It's by having no judgment. I have no idea, again, what I'm going to learn from each other. I just trust that it's going to show up and be there. I'm never going to be in judge of you and say like, you know, hey, I know what's right for you. So do this. I have no clue. Again, if I go back to your background, your history, I don't know what got you here. I don't know what the right choice is for you to make to change direction with your business. I don't know what the right thing is for you to change the direction with your parenting style either. What I can do is share my experience with you, and you might gain something from that or you might not. Either way, all I've done is alleviated conflict because I'm not giving you advice. Advice includes judgment. It's not there. Here's what got me to where I am today. You take from that what you will, which might be nothing.
Yeah.
And away you go. No conflict.
Yeah, really interestingly. And for everyone listening at home, I do need to share with you that Lee does have fabulous hair. And
Thank you. Thanks for noticing.
And it is part of his, and anyone watching the video podcast can comment in the comments below.
Please do. Only good stuff, of course. It's become
part of his personal brand, just like my lack of hair has accidentally become part of my personal brand. But he does have fabulous hair. Really interesting. So the key point here is not advice, experiences, and sharing experiences. And sharing is two-way. It's not just, I'm this person and I'm sharing my experiences because I'm important. It's listening to each other. And listening to each other without judgment. Yeah. All right.
100%.
Let's unpack the questioning part, right? So when you're leading a group, so now you're leading the cohort, how do you, Lee, use questions to inspire and motivate and stimulate conversation?
Yeah. I do this a lot of times with like my retreat work, which could be for teams or for the groups of CEOs or things like that. I show up. The most often asked question, of course, is who are you? What do you do? Right. So I give them the same sort of thing that you kind of started with, you know, here's my list of credentials. Right. So like I should be qualified to be at this table. And that's so like, great. Which in my mind, like a lot of times they want to introduce themselves to. And I'm like, it doesn't really matter. It really doesn't matter to me. What I'm interested in is you as a human and what got you here, of course, as I said. So I just say things like, so what would bring us the most value for the time that we're going to spend together? What brings us the most value? And then I listen. I ask a good question and then I listen. And that's really it. That's not like is that a key to success? I don't know, right? Like all I do is ask a question and then genuinely listen to the answer. And I'll tell you where this worked really well for me. This was years ago. It was a sort of friend of mine, a CEO that I would say from face view looks like they had their life just put together so well, right? They had the perfect little family, the white picket fence, the dog, probably making a bazillion dollars a year, like don't have to worry about money or any of that sort of stuff, right? Like just the overall. And I would say that person would tell you that they were probably living a pretty good life at that moment. And here we are, and we're in this setting. And I just, you know, we went around, we had, you know, all the sort of formality and stuff. What are the things we're going to work on? And we created a list, a little agenda together about here's the three or four things that we're going to work on today. Cool. One of those was like, how do we get into touch with what's really going on with us? And so I said, would everyone tell me what's going on in your world? Talk about it business wise, or you know, from your career wise. Talk about it from a family standpoint, and then talk about it from a personal standpoint too. And so everyone was going around and giving sort of that gift of that little bit of vulnerability. And this person shared their business thing and they shared their family thing and then said, cool, thanks. That's me. You know, like that's my time. And I went, hold on a second. I didn't hear like your personal update. Like I didn't hear what's going on with you personally. And they said, oh yeah. And they talked again about the business and they talked again about the family. And I said, I hear those. What I don't hear is the you in there. What's you personally? How are you doing? And they said again, like, and they talk about the business, they talk about the family. And I'm like, well, tell me what's going on with, and I use their name instead of any pronoun or something along those lines. Right. I just used their name and I said, how are you doing? And I just got like immense waterworks. Right. So just instantly starts to cry. And this person that has it all together and is, you know, perfect on paper said, I can't tell you the last time that someone asked how I was actually doing and genuinely cared about my answer. It was such a powerful lesson to me all those years ago that I'm like, yes, that's our human connection, right? It's not about the stuff or the other things or the other people. It's why does that matter to me? Here's why that matters to me, not to my spouse, my life partner, my partner, my significant other, the people I hang out with, right? It is why that matters to me personally. And everything was going well in terms of like all the other stuff, but inside there was still just some emotions and some feelings and some, at the end of the day, we're all pink and gooey on the inside. And let's talk about that. And that's what we got down to that day. Just that sense of listening. I asked a question and then waited for the response. That was it. There's my key to success. It's the same thing that I do with the 2-year-olds too. How are you doing? And they might tell me about the day at school or, you know, that sort of thing, or what they had for breakfast, or that's a common topic of conversation, or about their pets or something, you know, their family. And I'm like, that's fantastic. And what about you personally? Anything else? And that's when the good stuff comes out. So ask the question. Is there a list of questions that people ask me that all the time? Can you just give me like a list of like great questions? I draw inspiration from all over the place with those two. I have no idea. And most of the time I don't have like a script of like, I must ask this, 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 and this. I have a sort of idea. All those questions are going to be open-ended. I don't like to give people choices that you must choose A, B, or C, because then it's incredibly hard for them to pick letter D, right? I just say open-ended questions. I look for emotion. I see what you mentioned body language. I observe that body language. You can see when there's a difference. And that's usually my next question. Well, what happened or what just changed? Or that sounded bigger than the other stuff. Tell me more about that. And just keep that conversation open. And I found that just to be a key to success, to allow other people to explore what's going on for them, to see what's happened in them themselves. Sometimes I don't even know it. Ask the question or give sort of the thought prompt, if you will. A lot of the questions I ask aren't questions, just like you did. Could you unpack that more? Could you say more about that and see what greatness is there?
That's wonderful sharing, Lee. Thank you so much. And there's lots of things I take away from that. But what I'm seeing from you is that it's not about a pre-scripted set of questions. It's about being in the moment, about paying attention and paying attention without judgment. And then you'll be able to see the cues. You'll be able to see where you need to take to get that person to open up and have their own moment of self-discovery.
Yeah.
Absolutely wonderful.
The presence is such a gift, right? When I can just be present with somebody, it's amazing. It's incredible. It's a place that I don't know that we get that gift as often as we probably should, you know, like in our world. So I love to give that presence. And it's probably one of my superhero powers is that I can be totally present with you and I can be in the moment and quickly too. Yeah. I don't need a lot of buildup and like a lot of like, we can have this conversation. I don't know how long we've been talking now because I'm focused on our conversation. I haven't looked at the clock or anything like that, right? I'll let you keep track of the clock and you wrap me up when it's time because I'll talk all day, of course. But that's such a gift. What it also means, my friend Dave Rendell, who has a great book called Freak Factor, is he talks about that you don't get a gift without some sort of consequence, right? Like you've got a strength, you've got a weakness. There's yin and yang, right? Like there's balance, right? So I can be incredibly present with you for however long we need to. The balance part is, though, it makes me a horrible estimator of time. Much to my wife's chagrin, she's like, how long is this thing going to take? I'm like, we should be done in like 20, 30 minutes. And 4 hours later, and I haven't picked up the phone to see what she's calling about, or like, you know, forget about the plans for the barbecue later or something like that, because I'm like so in the moment. I've missed so many flights in my lifetime because this conversation is so good. It's so meaningful to me right now that there is always another airplane. There is always another something else. And I want to be here and in this moment right now together with you. And that's it, right? So somebody asked the other day, they're like, what's the ringtone on your phone? I'm like, I actually don't even know if there is a ringtone on this phone. It's been on silent and do not disturb for I can't tell you how many years, because that just sucks energy from me. I'd rather be here and in the moment, and I'll catch up with all those messages at some point or not.
For everyone listening on the podcast, you can probably tell from the audio just how engaged Lee is in the conversation. I can tell you all, share with you this word picture on the Zoom. It's coming through in volumes, right? So I can, everything about what Lee just said about being in the moment, I can tell you is 100% true. And it makes me feel like I'm the most important person in his world right now, that I matter and this conversation matters to him. And that creates such an environment where I have no idea how long we've been talking either, Lee.
Good.
It could be several hours. I don't know. But honestly, it is a gift. It truly is a gift. And I do agree with you that with every gift you get, or every superpower, you also have a kryptonite. That's
right.
Yeah, that's a good sharing. It's one for us all to think about when it comes to self-awareness. One more thing I want to share on that, and we'll go to our next topic. It is World Mental Health Day this Sunday, and by the time this goes to air, it would have already passed. But that thing that you said about asking someone how they are and taking a genuine interest in the answer, please. And sometimes it can even be what they don't say that gives you the cue that there's something there, right? So could be that you ask them, oh, how are you today, Lee? And they give a long pause and go, yeah, I'm okay. And what the real answer was, the pause, not the words.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
So be curious, and if you want to be there for the person, be curious and find out what's really going on in their life. Yeah. Just wonderful.
I want to throw in one little experience here too, yeah, is that for keeping with that idea of the positive psychology and everything too, for years, if I'm not at home, when I wake up in the morning, I'm in some random hotel room in some other city, there to deliver a message, much like today, right? And I would wake up, and depending on the time zone, sometimes I'm ahead, sometimes I'm behind Stephanie or something too, I would send a text message every morning that said like, hi, good morning, I'm so excited, how did you sleep last night? Like all these things, you know, kind of like normal, I would think, morning conversation. Maybe it's not, I don't know. I'm a naturally perky person. I don't need any coffee or anything like that either to get going. So like, it's sort of my first thought as I wake up, you know, I need to go connect with Stephanie, right? Like that's my first thought when I wake up. I send a positive message, and that positive message a lot of times is based on her why, or some of her hows, or some of the ways that she operates in the world. And so I'll send something, you know, like I know she had a big day, I'm trying to think what that was a couple of days ago. I don't even know what day of the week today is. But like, maybe it's all the sun in the Bahamas, I'm not sure. But like, she wasn't here, and I knew she had a big day. And I'm like, think of all those lives that you're going to inspire and touch today. And just how awesome is that, that you get to do that today for a living, right? Like that's it. And so like, I love that. And I love being able to share that positive message. One of our hows at the dance studio is touch the life of each and every dancer. So by talking about that and keeping that forefront and center for her too, not only is a reminder to me, like, okay, so now what else can I do to go touch somebody else's life today? And you know, it's an inspirational for her, perhaps, you know, to say like, you know, oh good, like it's going to be a good day, where, you know, also she went to bed a little late the night before, and and maybe didn't eat as well as she could have or should have or something along those lines. So like, I kind of sense that she might be a little low on energy. So I wanted to kind of help pump up a little bit today. And I think that was a good way to kind of do that. And it was after like years of doing this that I simply thought about it. I'm like, why don't I do that for other people? Why don't I do that for like our team members or something like that? So I was out of town like that day and I'm like, all right, this is great. I send Stephanie this great message and I get out my phone and I send it to a couple of our staff members. I send it to our general manager, Sarah, who's just incredible. I send it to Jory, who's like a dear friend that's been, you know, that worked with us for quite a while. I sent it, you know, and to a couple other people that were on the team with us. And I just sent like, you know, today's going to be an amazing day and you've got this and like how incredible and just, you know, like same sort of feel, you know, just positive. And I did it different to each person because I'm not going to try and copy and paste this and, you know, like do all that sort of stuff. I want to make it custom to each person. And, you know, normally Stephanie like responds back since she wakes up. Oh, I slept great. So good. Yeah, it is going to be a great day. And thank you. And you're going to have a great day too. You know, like and kind of give that back and forth to each other. And from all the team members, I got nothing. I got like crickets.
Okay.
I'm like, well, that's weird. And I waited, you know, like maybe they're not awake yet. Maybe they're not at work. Maybe they're not check in or, you know, who knows? Could be on a phone call, whatever. Right. And like 20, 30 minutes goes by, nothing. 45, an hour, nothing. Couple of hours. I'm in a session. I come back out and I'm like expecting that somebody's going to text back and be like, you too, have a good day or I hope you're doing great or something along those lines. Finally, like no response. It's been hours. And I pick up the phone. And I call Jory, who's a dear friend and worked with us. And I'm like, hey. Jory's like, hey. Like, did you get my message from earlier? Jory said, yeah. I'm like, and she goes, are you dying? I'm like, what? She's like, are you dying? What are you talking about? She goes, I don't know. I get this random message from you today. That's going to be like, everything's going to be incredible. And you got this and what an awesome day and how inspiring. And my natural assumption is that the next thing you're going to tell me is horrible news that you've got some cancer or something like that. And I'm like, why would that be your natural assumption? And she said, I don't know, but we've all been talking about it around the office today, like that, you know, like hypothesizing about what could be going wrong or what you're going to say that's bad next because you said something that's good. And I'm like, do we have that type of work environment that would be the case? She said, no. And I'm like, I was just trying to simply say, have a good day. And she's like, cool. I said, if you could respond back next time with have a good day too, that would be awesome. She's like, great. And it became like a running joke around the team to say, and I'm sitting here thinking myself as a leader, like, it's not that I haven't been, you know, spreading positivity and sharing the message and going towards our vision or any of those things, but I didn't kind of do the work in the maintenance every day to say like, you know, this is going to be good. And this isn't, you know, and I don't want this to be a rote thing that I'm like every day I must text people or every day I do this thing or every day I buy lunch or like any of that sort of stuff. But I do want to make sure that I'm sort of checking in and touching base. And I do that not just with people that are on our team that I'm, you know, that I have a vested interest in, you know, paying to be there or anything like that. It's friends, it's family members, it's everybody that's in my sphere. Like I kind of get that and I send that sort of thing as often as I can. And I send it to random people. It's always different. It's never, you know, sort of the same message and it's what strikes me. So if I have a thought about somebody, like I'll probably text Jory a little bit later and tell her how awesome she is again. Right. And now she totally responds quickly and like, thanks, you too. Or, you know, like whatever. But as I think of people, I'm like, let me just send that message right now. And I'll tell you that. So I turned 40 4 years ago. So you can do some math there. One of my friends, one of my dear friends put together a video and went out to all of our other friends and said, would you send me like just a minute or two about Lee? And it was probably the greatest gift that anyone's ever given me. And they, all my friends are on screen. And one of my friends who I've known forever said, that guy never misses a chance to tell you that he loves you. And that's just my favorite thing about him. Absolutely incredible. And that was like the most meaningful thing that I think I've ever heard in my entire life.
Wow. So you're getting quite emotional, which I think is beautiful. It's very visible on the Zoom. Hopefully you're picking up on the audio as well. So something that happened in Lee's life 4 years ago is still touching his heart today. It's because people remember how you made them feel, right? So they might forget what you, this is Maya Angelou, everyone knows the quote.
Yep.
People might forget what you said. They might forget what you did, but they'll never forget how they made you feel. And look at Lee's physical and emotional reaction 4 years after something that touched his heart. It's just still with him today. There's three major things, including the example of the video that I've picked up from that, Lee. The first one is about authentic connection, all the way back to what you shared with your wife, to then the way that you tailored the message to every one of your team members. You were taking a genuine interest in them, and that's what builds authentic connection. That's what builds trust.
Yeah.
The second one is very interesting and one for us all to think about it at home. If it's out of character, if it's something that you haven't done before, it may take a while for people to get used to it. So
yeah.
I talk to people about the fact that how are you is not a greeting, it's a question. If you're going to ask it, you're going to take a genuine interest in the answer. And certainly in Australia, where I grew up, it's definitely the case, but I think it's relatively universal that how are you has become a greeting. And you'll greet someone in the morning and you'll say, oh, how are you? Yeah, good, thanks. And they'll just go about their business. Initially, when you start applying this, that where you are taking a genuine interest, you may have to say, no, really, how are you? That was a question.
Yeah.
It wasn't a greeting, right? You might have to repeat it a few times before they realize, oh, Mick is really asking how I am. Oh, okay. It's not just hello. All right. So it might take a while. And the third one that you said, I think is super importantly, maintenance. Then once you're in this pattern where you're taking that authentic connection, taking a genuine interest in people, it's not just how are you today? Oh, tick in the box. I asked my team how I was. It's every day, and you decide your own patterns of how this happened. You need to have that maintenance of that connection.
And genuinely care about that response.
Just beautifully. Thank you so much for sharing so openly with us today. It's just absolutely amazing. I think we have been talking for quite some time, even though both of us have completely lost track of temporal awareness. I will bring us to a close now. I'm going to go into our rapid fire
set
of questions.
This is where I shine. Bonus rounds.
This is me. But there's been so much out of today. It's just been an amazing experience talking with you today, Lee, and I know the audience is going to love it. So the rapid fire. What is your favorite book?
That's a loaded question. That's sort of like asking, like, which one of your kids do you like the most? You're not supposed to have an answer, but we all probably have an answer. I'll give it. I won't go with one because that's probably too hard. Most impactful book on my life has been Start With Why by Simon Sinek, and it's. I've said very, very early on, there are only a few people in my world that I would ever just say I would follow these people blindly. Stephanie's one of them. Simon Sinek's another one. Vern Harnish is another one. And so, like, I would follow these people. Kevin Fisher, my best friend, another one there too. Right. Like, I just say yes. So Simon Sinek, Start With Why. Amazing things on a business side, of course. Things like Good to Great, Double Double by Cameron Harrell. All these are really fantastic. You called one out actually, as we were just getting set up, the Beastie Boys book, sorry, I mispronounced that. I misspoke. It's Beastie Boys book. There's no the in the Beastie Boys. So there's a very good story about that in the book too. So that's kind of fun. Beastie Boys book is, could be the story of myself and my friends, Khalid and Nick, from growing up. And so, that one's been a meaningful one to me too. And a lot of other, there's so many, it's so hard to pick one. So there's a couple, Maybe there's something in there.
Brilliant. Okay. Thank you. All right. Favorite quote.
Yep. Favorite quote. Probably one from my dad. I always allow 10 minutes to get lost.
Nice. Love it.
There's always serendipity. There's always fun there.
Very good. Yeah. Love it. Okay. What's one thing you know now that you wish you knew when you were 20?
Purpose is everything.
Yeah. Good. Love that. That's been a discovery for me as well, for sure. And finally, I'm sure all of our audience have been truly inspired by today. So many learnings for me personally. And I'm sure that everyone in the audience has learned a lot from today's session. If they want to get hold of you and learn more about what you do in any of your organizations, how do they get in contact with you, Lee?
Hopefully I'm super easy to find. You can reach out via email, lee@hessepartners.com, lee@hessepartners.com. Find me on LinkedIn. That's a really good place where we connect. I post a lot of things there, and actually what I post a lot of the times there, Mick, are just great questions. And I like to foster that engagement in that environment, even on that social platform, where I try and just ask some things, some random things. And sometimes it's what other people have talked about. And sometimes it's what, I'm thinking about today. And I usually phrase that as an open-ended question and just hope for greatness in the comments. So please do engage there. That's a super easy way to connect up and let's talk. In our teaching with Simon, one of the things I love to talk about is at the very end. I mean, my why, you started off with this. My why is to create art so that everyone can discover their own inspiration, love, and greatness. Sometimes people think like by reaching out to me that like it's an imposition or that they're taking up my time or something like that. And I kind of look at it the opposite way to say, like, don't deny me living my why today, right? Like, let's have this conversation. Let's create some art together because there's so much greatness that can be there. So please do reach out. Let's talk. Let's have a conversation. It's not, money's always a byproduct. That's all stuff that I don't care about. And people are hounding me to be like, we owe you money. I'm like, oh, cool. Thanks. Like at some point pay me, I guess. Right. Like, That's the way I kind of operate. Like, let's talk, let's have a conversation. And that's what's way more intriguing to me than how much can I charge for this or anything along those lines.
Just brilliant. Thank you so much, Lee. It's been a great honor having you on the show. Thank you so much for your time. I've just loved this conversation. Literally, I could talk to you all day and I'm sure that we would still be going and just amazing.
Let's go walk on the beach. We can do that. Let's go walk on the beach, though. It'll be just as good, too.
I'll be on
a plane. Might have more wind noise in the audio, but that's okay.
I'll be on a plane. I'll be over there tomorrow. No, fantastic. Thank you so much, Lee. Really a great honor. Thank you. Thank you for listening to the Leadership Project podcast at mickspears.com. I am your host, Mick Spears. Sound design and editing by Faris Sadek. Social media by Gerald Calabo. And special thanks to our operations manager, Say Spears. We appreciate you and we appreciate your time today. You can catch the video podcast and our series of shorter videos by subscribing to the Leadership Project YouTube channel. And you can join the conversation at our Facebook community group. We look forward to bringing you another great interview next week as we learn together and lead together. In the meantime, please do take care, look out for each other, and always remember to challenge the status quo. Thank you for listening to the Leadership Project at mickspears.com. A huge call out to Faris Sadek for his video editing of all of our video content, and to all of the team at TLP, Joanne Goes On, Gerald Calabo, and my amazing wife, Say Spears. I could not do this show without you. Don't forget to subscribe to the Leadership Project YouTube channel, where we bring you interesting videos each and every week. And you can follow us on social, particularly on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram. Now, in the meantime, please do take care, look out for each other, and join us on this journey as we learn together and lead together.